it's going to take an understanding that the way that healthcare is delivered in rural areas may be different in the future than it was 20 years ago. And so that's going to take change, and we're going to have to adapt and adopt. It doesn't mean that it's not important. In fact, it's just as important today as it was yesterday, but it's just, it probably is going to be done different. I think, you know, things like telemedicine are going to be part of it. You know, things like, you know, healthcare extenders, which, you know, are, you know, technicians working with veterinarians, I think are going to be part of it. These are all things that we have to be willing to look at and be willing to adapt or adopt over time.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost digestive health, performance, and profitability with Digesterone Prime, a feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in beef calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime. DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Control the cortisol surge and control your drug costs on your inbound cattle. Make the 21-day SHOT Show a thing of the past with QFA 2000. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rangin Livestock Nutrition. We partner with a purpose. Boehringer Ingelheim puts cattle first with innovative health solutions, vaccines, and care for your herd. Visit bianimalhealth.com/cattle.
High-producing cows need safe, healthy environments. Healthy environments starts with Jones Hamilton.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm Travis Mullenix, and today I have Dr. Dan Grooms with me. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Travis. Thanks for the invite.
No problem. So Dr. Grooms is the Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine at Iowa State. Previously, you're a professor at Michigan State in the Vet Med program of beef cattle health, teaching, research, and outreach.
Yep. Travis, I like to tell people that I'm a cow doctor. Actually grew up on a Angus farm in Ohio, kind of commercial Angus farm, and then have been really working in the animal health fields my entire life, but mostly working in the cattle industry, both the beef as well as the dairy. And so again, just like to tell people I'm a cow doctor. I've kind of risen up to this position of being a dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine, but at my heart and soul, it's really working with cattle producers to help them produce a healthy and safe product and help them to be also profitable and make a living off the animals that they take care of.
Now, I think it's a tremendous impact when we have large animal vets that move up the chain and be in dean positions and help, you know, with the next generation of large animal vets that we really need out there servicing beef producers and dairy producers.
I mean, veterinarians play such a critical role in our livestock industries. They're there to help our farmers and our stakeholders and our colleagues to take care of their animals, keep them healthy. A huge role in food safety, and certainly in food security, just kind of globally, just making sure that we have enough food to feed the folks that want to eat our products. And then obviously, part of our job is also to help folks make a living. Okay. And, you know, it's really, really difficult to make a living when you're dealing with health problems all the time, with your livestock. So we understand that keeping animals healthy, really helps, the owners of those animals make a living as well.
Help your calves with digestive health and boost performance by enhancing feed intake and supporting gut health. Digesterone Prime boosts your beef calves' immunity and growth while increasing profitability. Plus, it has no withdrawal periods, making it a smart choice for your feeding program. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime.
Yeah, no, that's very important. And so, and we've seen, you know, this challenge in vet med and even in ag in general of this challenge of getting kids out to these rural environments that we desperately need more and more help in, you know, vet medicine and just the workforce. And I think, you know, from your role, and I know a lot of college veterinary medicine programs are trying to deal with this. I haven't seen a good solution that's really driving kids back, and for good reasons why some of them are choosing not to go back. And so why is there a shortage of, you know, vets going back to rural America and servicing large animal practices?
Well, it's great. It's a great question, Travis. Let me just start by, you know, maybe a bigger picture within veterinary medicine in general. And, you know, just in general right now, there's a general just shortage of veterinarians across the entire veterinary industry. So certainly we're focused today on the shortages within rural America or food animal, but there's also shortages in other areas, in specialty practices, in academia, where I work. I mean, we struggle sometimes to hire good folks, regulatory agencies. So USDA, state departments of agriculture have struggled to hire veterinarians to, you know, to do the regulatory work necessary to keep our, generally our nation's livestock healthy. So there's a bigger problem just in general. And that's starting to be solved. There are more veterinary schools coming online. Many veterinary schools, including Iowa State, are growing their class size to kind of meet this broader demand. So I think that's point number one. But in general, though, across America, there are less and less veterinarians working in rural areas. And, you know, I think there's multiple reasons for that. You know, there's a financial reason. There are the ability or the compensation that you might receive in a rural area, no doubt in general is going to be less than if you took a position, you know, in a suburban or urban area, or maybe say with a, you know, with a corporation or a business or a company or something like that. So compensation in general, if you look across rural America, is going to be less. And so that makes an impact, especially with some of the educational debt that students graduate now with. And so when they look at their educational debt and then they look at options to help service that debt, rural America looks less attractive just because of that debt that they have to service. So that's an important factor. Number two is that you know, many of our graduates, and I think graduates in general, are looking for a different experience when it comes to working in veterinary healthcare. So they're often looking for a practice that has multiple people, that has kind of a team approach, that has a healthcare team, that team allows for a good mentorship, it allows for sharing ideas, it allows for some semblance of work-life balance, in other words, opportunities to take time off and do other things. That's hard. All those things are hard to do if you're in a one or a two person practice in a small town. And so, you know, again, our folks that graduate today are looking for a little bit different experience. And for practices in rural America that have figured out how to kind of meet those needs, they are successful or becoming successful. Multi-person practices, maybe they cover a larger area, but there's multiple doctors, there's technicians, there's other people that help provide that healthcare. And so I see that as actually one of the solutions in the future, is that instead of having a one or two person practice in every small town and every small, you know, or county, in, you know, we have larger practices that serve a region. So that's a second issue. You know, another issue is that just the experiences often are not what the small town experiences or small town opportunities are not what a lot of new graduates are looking for. So they're looking for, you know, communities that have, you know, really good school systems, that have services that they want. They're looking for communities that maybe have opportunities for their partner. You know, so a job opportunity, and often some of our rural communities just aren't attractive to the newer generations. And I think, you know, everything I've said so far is true of veterinary medicine, but it's also true of many other professions, whether we're talking about human doctors or dentists or lawyers or whatever. And so that becomes a problem as well. One of the other problems that often we don't talk about is we actually, I think, produce a lot of veterinarians. I think many colleges of veterinarians produce a lot of veterinarians that want to go into rural practice, and they actually go into rural practice or food dental practice, but then they leave. So retention has become a big problem. And so understanding why they leave, and it could be financial, it could be lifestyle, you know, it could be they just didn't have a good experience with the practice they went into. There's lots of reasons, but sometimes we produce a lot of veterinarians, and I think we do a good job of producing many veterinarians that want to work in rural areas, but then they don't stick. And so I think trying to understand why they don't stay is really, really important as we go forward. So I think those are the big reasons. So the financial one, the mentorship, lifestyle, opportunities, once they're in those small communities, those are things that tend to be, tend to be problematic when students are looking at working in rural towns. Again, whether it's in Iowa or Ohio, where I grew up, or Michigan, where I was for 20 years, they're all the same problems. So.
Yeah, and all of those are large hurdles to overcome.
But they can be overcome. I mean, it's not, you know, there are things like the financial burden. You know, we can help manage that with, or that can be helped manage with loan repayment programs. And, you know, so whether it's a federal loan repayment program or a state loan repayment program, that helps to eliminate that, or at least reduce or manage that educational debt, which then at least alleviates that financial stress that they might be dealing with.
Yeah, some of the community aspects are harder to overcome. Is, you know, a lot of people just don't want to go back to living in rural America, that there's nothing to do. They may not have a significant other, and that makes it difficult, as you're out there alone, and, you know, et cetera. And so that's some large hurdles that we have across the board at Ag of getting students out there.
Yeah. One of the things, and of course, this is a community kind of taking charge of themselves. At least here in Iowa, I've seen, you know, communities that realize that they have to figure out how to reinvent themselves and become attractive to younger folks. And so, you know, they think about, well, what businesses can I bring or try to attract to the town that would be attractive to young folks today, and I've seen some communities that have started doing that, and you know, they're making inroads. It's not a overnight process; it's a slow process. But they're attracting, like I say, a microbrewery. I'm just making, and it's true. But I know of a community where they have a microbrewery now, and it's, you know, that's attractive. Or they have something around theater, maybe local theater or local community theater or something like that. That's attractive. So, you know, making sure your schools are attractive, especially if folks are thinking about families. I mean, that's really important. So I think if you intentionally think about what's going to be attractive to the next generation, then you can start making some inroads in that area.
Yeah. How much has the increase in corporately owned vet clinics change some of that, because they offer a lot more work-life balance opportunities? You don't have to buy in necessarily. And so how much does that play a role in, you know, going to maybe a smaller town, but it's a corporately owned facility versus something that's not?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the corporate owned practices are really, I mean, they're not taking over. Basically, they're taking over practices that exist. So they're not actually adding more practices. So they're taking over ones, and they're pretty selective in the ones that they take over. Right? They're taking over ones that are pretty profitable, usually in suburban and urban areas. On occasion, you know, mid-sized towns. And they certainly have a place, and they're, you know, where their place is really taking practices over that nobody, or there's nobody interested in buying them. And, you know, that's another factor that we're seeing, is this generation of veterinarians that we're producing are less and less interested in owning their own business. Okay. They just want to be a veterinarian. You know, they want to be a veterinarian and not have to worry about managing people or managing finances or those things. And so that's where the corporate practices have come in and bought these practices and continue to manage them and let the veterinarian just be a veterinarian. The downside of that is that, you know, if you look at the history of where veterinarians have really made most of their wealth, I guess, it's actually in ownership. Okay. And so you own the practice and that's where you actually develop wealth. And so, you know, many of our new graduates are, you know, they're working in corporate practices, but they're not really going to be in a situation where they can build wealth over time. But in many cases, they're doing that. They're going in the corporate practice because they do pay well. There's no doubt about it. And those are the practices where they can help to service their debt as well at a reasonable level.
Yeah. It would seem like offering a business track within vet schools would be a good opportunity of providing that basis of business management that would help with those skill sets.
Yeah. And most colleges of veterinary medicine do offer some semblance of at least very rudimentary business management. I mean, you know, our students have to learn a lot. And, you know, to really become, you know, really good at business management is not, I mean, let's be honest, we're not going to make them good business managers, but at least we can expose them to it. And we do. We have elective courses here in business management. We have clubs that are focused on business management. So there, for those folks that are really interested in business management, there are lots of opportunities here at Iowa State as well as other colleges of veterinary medicine as well.
And some of that definitely should happen at the bachelor's level within animal science or biology. What are they coming out of?
Sure, sure.
So what's Iowa State doing to alleviate some of these issues of the lack of rural veterinarians?
So a few things that we're working on. So part of it is creating a pipeline of folks that are interested in going back into rural veterinary medicine. So for instance, in working with our College of Agriculture here at Iowa State, we've started what's called the Production Animal Early Acceptance Program. So this is a program for students that come to Iowa State in their undergraduate program and are really interested in going back to rural Iowa or rural America, and they're interested in food animal medicine. We will actually provide them early acceptance into the College of Veterinary Medicine. Essentially, what that means is we will reserve a seat for them. They still have to complete their prerequisites, and they have to meet a certain academic threshold. But if they meet that threshold, then they have a seat waiting for them, okay? And they can matriculate. They don't have to compete for that seat against 2,000 other applicants. They, you know, we provide that seat, that pathway in. So that's a new program, Travis. So the first cohort of those students actually will be entering the college this coming fall. And then we'll see how they do over 4 years. And then we'll see where, if they go into rural practice and if they stay. So, I mean, you know, there's nothing attached to this program that says if you're in this program, that you must go back and work in food animal medicine rural. But hopefully we're selecting students that have that interest. And then we're really trying to mentor them and kind of take them under our wing and, you know, make them feel special and help them hopefully have the tools that when they do go back into rural practice, they're ready to rock and roll and do a great job. So we'll see how that goes. Other schools have similar programs. Where I came from at Michigan State, we had a program like that I would say of those students, about 50% of them ended up back in rural practice. The other 50%, once they got into veterinary school, they found other things that they enjoyed or life happened, you know, they met a partner and the partner said, I got to live in New York City or something. And so you never know where life will take you. Even though the best intention is to go back to rural Iowa, you never know where life will take you sometimes. So.
Yeah, but I would think 50% is really great.
It's not. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not bad at all, right? Because like you said, a lot of students, you know, they figure other things out, you know, it's 4 or 5 years down the road and they discover other likes. Hey, I really do like a mixed practice.
Yep.
And you know, they like that, or like you say, they met someone that has to live in X, Y, and Z, and it kind of moves them to a different location.
You bet. Yeah.
And so, but that's the challenge, is there's nothing holding them to go back to rural medicine.
Absolutely.
And it would be great if there's programs that they can buy into that maybe helps with their student debt, et cetera, if they went in 5-10 years in a rural practice. And it pays off their student debt, et cetera. So are those concepts, or working on those ideas as well?
So, again, the loan repayment programs exist now. They're in Iowa specifically, since that's where I'm at. Our students, or even, you know, let's say that Travis Molinex was a veterinarian and decided he wanted to come to Iowa and he had student debt. You could come to Iowa right now and there would be three opportunities where you could get apply for a grant to offset your student debt. There's a federal program. So the USDA administers a federal loan repayment program. The state of Iowa has a state-based loan repayment program. And then here in Iowa, the Iowa Farm Bureau has started a loan repayment program as well. So there's three different opportunities right now for folks that want to work in Iowa in rural communities to get some level of debt forgiveness, okay? And I will tell you, Travis, that I believe that over time that those programs are going to make a difference. And here's why. One, you know, those students are going to have less debt, and so they potentially then could take less compensation and be happy, okay? So that's number one. Number two is many of those folks, because they're not paying off a student loan, can take that money and reinvest in a practice and buy a practice. And we've seen that happen here in Iowa, where younger veterinarians who would love to own a practice or be a partner in a practice just can't do it because they have a lot of debt that they have to take care of. But if they can eliminate that debt, then they're more likely to reinvest. And once you purchase or become a partner and buy a practice, you're much more likely to stick. It's not guaranteed, because you can always sell out, but if you make that commitment to invest in that practice, you're probably in it for the long run. And so I think, you know, since we have these opportunities and given enough time, that's going to make a difference. It's not going to solve it completely. It doesn't solve the, you know, is the community attractive? It doesn't solve my partner's issue. It doesn't solve some of the other issues, but it does help solve that financial part. So,
yeah, to me, it sounds like that would be one of the biggest hurdles. If, you know, you can have some kind of loan forgiveness program to keep them in rural America, then I would think it would draw a lot more students back.
Yeah, well, I know of students that have specifically looked for those opportunities, in whether it's in rural Iowa or rural name the state, because, you know, they're okay, you know, with doing that, and they would like to do that, and the loan repayment program helps that to be much, much more attractive. So,
yeah, and that's fairly similar to a lot of WICHE programs, that if you go back and work 5 years, then you got in-state tuition if you went to whatever, you know, vet school that they're under with WICHE. And so that was a good pull for a lot of students in you know, in states that didn't have a vet school, that could go to Washington State or K-State or wherever it was, and had to come back to their home state for 5 years and got that in-state tuition paid for.
So some other things we're doing. So we also have to realize that there may be folks that come to veterinary school that don't have a lot of experiences working in rural practices or working with agriculture, but have that interest. And so we provide a variety of summer internships, experiential opportunities where students can work in food animal practices. Could be a mixed animal practice, could be a swine practice, it could be a dairy type of setting. So they're getting experiences working within those industries as a veterinarian. In many cases, they're living in rural communities. And so it provides them experiences and hopefully an understanding of what it's like to live in a rural community and be a veterinarian. So every summer we have about 20 of these summer internships, and they're all food animal focus, their dairy, their beef, their swine, their poultry, and their mixed animal practice. So they're all kind of focused on those rural settings. You know, many of those students, I would say, you know, many of those students end up back in rural America, or they're working for, like in the swine industry, they're working for some of the integrated swine operations. And that's a pretty good, cool program that I think is making a difference. We also have folks here working on the retention side as well, especially Iowa State. We have what's called here the Swine Medicine Education Center. So it's basically kind of the leading swine medicine kind of teaching unit, that, and we provide a lot of educational resources for schools all over the country. But one of the things that they just got a large grant to work on is trying to understand the retention issue, especially, and this would be on the swine side. And so why is it that folks go into swine medicine and then leave? Okay, what are the barriers? What are the issues? And then most importantly, what could be done to, you know, to try to slow that leakage over time. And I suspect that some of the things that they find will be just as relevant to beef cattle veterinarians or you know, other folks as well. So we look forward to some of the findings out of that study.
Yeah, that'd be great. And back to the internship programs. I've seen so many times students go off to rural America and love the community that they interned at, and then they ended up going and buying a clinic at that, you know, in that area.
Yeah.
And so I think those are great opportunities. Just getting them out there and spending that time in that community changes their mind of what that community is.
Well, in our summer internship program, one of the prerequisites for being involved in that from kind of a practice partner position is the students, when you have them, not only are they working for you and doing veterinary medicine work, but we also want you to engage them in the community. We want you to introduce them to the community leaders. We want you to introduce them to the service opportunities, because again, those are things potentially that may be attractive to a young professional. And the sooner that they learn that those opportunities exist, or that, you know, there's other folks there that they can work with at a professional level, then the more likely that they're going to think about wanting to go back there. So I know, again, going back to some of these successful larger practices, one of the things I think has made them successful is they purposely find roles for their employees outside of the practice in kind of a leadership role. So they encourage them to become, you know, a member of the school board or a member of some other organization in town. It could be the Lions Club or something like that. They purposely want them to engage in those groups and become leaders, because, you know, again, that, you know, as you kind of develop those other relationships and those other networks, it makes it even more powerful to stay within that community. So
it does. You're a little more bought into the community at that point.
Absolutely. So you bet.
Yeah. Well, Dan, anything else you want to touch on that we didn't discuss?
No. Again, Travis, I think the important thing here is that this is a problem that we all understand exists in veterinary medicine as well as in other professions. It's it's multidimensional in why it's occurring, and so the solution is going to be multidimensional too, and so it's going to take. It's going to take colleges of veterinary medicine. It's going to take legislators. It's going to take stakeholders. It's going to take veterinary practices all working together to kind of find creative solutions. It's also going to take an understanding that mentioned earlier, it's going to take an understanding that the way that healthcare is delivered in rural areas may be different in the future than it was 20 years ago. And so that's going to take change, and we're going to have to adapt and adopt. It doesn't mean that it's not important. In fact, it's just as important today as it was yesterday, but it's just, it probably is going to be done different. I think, you know, things like telemedicine are going to be part of it. You know, things like, you know, healthcare extenders, which, you know, are, you know, technicians working with veterinarians, I think are going to be part of it. These are all things that we have to be willing to look at and be willing to adapt or adopt over time.
I agree.
It's time for our famous three.
Tired of the 21-day shot show? Stop hitting the cortisol hornet's nest with a wiffle ball bat every time you wean, transport, commingle, do shoot work, or experience Mother Nature's mood swings with weather. The cortisol surge can't be stopped, but it can be proactively controlled. QFA 2000 is a proactive approach to reducing the risk of BRD in calves. QFA 2000 reduces the use of antimicrobials, improves innate immune function, and allows the calf to do what it's meant to do, efficiently gain weight. For less than half the cost of antimicrobials, you can take a proactive, hands-off approach with your calves. Control the 21-day cortisol surge and control your drug costs with QFA 2000. For more information, contact us at applied-biotechnologies.com.
Well, to wrap us up, I've got three questions here. And the first one is, what is your go-to recommended beef resource that you feel like is, you know, one of the best things for producers, stakeholders, whatnot to utilize?
Well, I guess I'll just be a little biased here. And it's one that I at least go to quite a bit. Actually, if you don't mind, I'll share two. One is here at Iowa. We have the Iowa Beef Center. Iowa Beef Center is basically a go-to resource for all kinds of things related to the beef industry. So that's a good resource that I often use. The other one that people may not be aware of, but I think is a great resource, especially when we're talking about infectious diseases of animals. And that's actually based here at the College of Veterinary Medicine, and it's called the Center for Food Security and Public Health. And on that website are all kinds of resources about infectious diseases. So you want to learn about, maybe you heard about this thing called bovine tuberculosis in Michigan, and you don't know anything about it. That center is going to have all kinds of resources on what is bovine tuberculosis and why should you care about it, or Yoni's disease in cattle or whatever. So the Iowa Beef Center, and then the Center for Food Security and Public Health, both here at Iowa State. I work here at Iowa State, so that's what I want to talk about.
Two great resources.
Two great resources, you bet.
So what is a non-ag book you recommend someone reading?
You know, great question. So one of the things I think that has helped me be successful in my career, you know, whether it was as I was a practitioner, once a mixed animal practitioner in Ohio, and then I went on to build, research teams and extension teams at Michigan State. And now I have a different type of a team here that I work with. And so I think, and it doesn't matter if you're a cattle producer or if you're a dean or you're a veterinarian, you know, just surrounding yourself with really good people, building good teams is really important. And I've become, Travis, kind of a disciple of an author called Patrick Lencioni, and he wrote a book, the three characteristics of a great team. And so basically it talks about, you know, kind of the traits that you look for in finding good team members. Okay. So, or good employees. And so he talks about these three things, and I use that every time that I interview somebody to be part of my leadership team, or I interview a new faculty member, or doesn't really matter. I kind of use that as kind of my checklist. Does this person check these three boxes? And if they do, then I suspect they're going to be a good member of my team. If they don't check one of them, then I'm like, okay, I need to think a little harder about this person. So,
nope, tremendous book. And lastly, what sets apart a successful beef professional from someone that isn't?
You know, that's a great question. And I guess if I was to say one thing, it's really building great networks. Okay. And when I say that, I mean, it's understanding that you don't know everything and you never will know everything. So, but you have a network of people out there that you can talk with and lean on for whatever issue or problem or opportunity that you're exploring. And, you know, so, you know, nutritionists, veterinarians, you know, bankers, you know, folks, that, you know, agronomists, all the folks that are necessary to really, you know, to really be a good farmer, to be a good beef producer, you know, and understanding that you just can't know it all, but you surround yourself with good people that can help you make hopefully the best decisions possible. So the folks that I have seen, I mean, honestly, whether it's in Michigan or here in Iowa, that I think are very successful. I look at the kind of the networks that they've built. I mean, their Rolodex is huge. Okay. and they, you know, for whatever problem or issue that they run into, they're not afraid to call those folks. Okay. And, you know, over my years, it's amazing how many folks call me for, and you know, they call me because I had knowledge over one disease. Okay. But they knew if they wanted to talk about Yoni's disease in Michigan, they called Dan Grooms. Okay. And so I think it's those folks that have figured out that network and have it and aren't afraid to use it.
Yeah. Well, one of the best responses from Extension is always, "I don't know, but I know who to call to find out for you."
That's exactly right. And I think that's true for the producer too. Yes. I don't know, but I'll call somebody and get their opinion or their thoughts or their ideas. You bet.
Oh, Dan, that's great. Well, thank you for the time and a lot of great info. Iowa State's done a really great job, I think, is trying to get veterinarians out to the rural America. And that's a tremendous issue that we have that hopefully in the next several years we can start getting more and more vets out.
Well, I agree. And I just like to let all your listeners know that we're all working hard at this and we'll keep working at it because it is important.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.